Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
The Sexually Liberated Woman podcast gets love from ShockRubs. ShockRubs makes beautiful, handcrafted sexual wellness products from 100% pure crystal. Crystals are a natural, earth-made material that help to awaken higher levels of consciousness, work through emotional imbalances, and heal deep core wounding. Take all of that, put it in sex toy form, and you've got yourself a mighty orgasmic tool. I have my own chakra that's made of 100% rose quartz, which is this really beautiful, soft pink-colored crystal that helps me cultivate self-love, opens my heart chakra, and heightens my capacity to feel pleasure. And my orgasms are incredible. So if you want to bring sacredness and a little witchiness to your erotic life, head to ShockRubs.com and use the code LIBERATION to get 10% off your purchase. That's ChakRubs.com, promo code LIBERATION. And may your orgasms be plentiful. Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Sexually Liberated Woman podcast. I'm Evian Whitney, and before we get into today's episode, I just wanted to say thank you to everyone who sent over love and prayers and solidarity after hearing my last episode. The last few weeks were so intense, but I'm feeling much, much better these days, and I know it has a lot to do with the support and encouragement I've been getting from my community. So from the bottom of my heart, thank you. Okay, I'm really excited to bring you today's episode because I'm introducing a new series that I'll be sharing with you periodically. It's called Sex with Friends, and it's going to feature super chill and light sex talks that I have with some of my in real life faves. We're going to be talking about their sexual origin stories, their current erotic identities. We're going to be reminiscing about their awkwardness and obliviousness about sex. And we're also going to be laughing a lot. That's actually one of the main reasons I loved this upcoming conversation with my friend Ida. We laughed so much that my cheeks were burning, which after a really hard month was much needed. So about my friend Ida, whose preferred pronouns are they, them, by the way. I met Ida a year ago at Lesbian Summer Camp, also known as A-Camp. They and I were in a cabin together called the Beehive, and we bonded quickly over shared sex positivity, polyamory, and some killer dance moves. Ida has been a part of my chosen family ever since, and what I love most about Ida is their openness and authenticity. Even though we haven't known each other very long, I feel so comfortable with Ida that I can tell them anything and won't feel weird doing so. And this is, I know, what makes Ida an incredible therapist, which is what she does. So we chatted about a lot of fun things, like how baby Ida learned about sex within their sort of strict Jehovah's Witness Latina upbringing. We talked about body positivity and Tumblr. And we also talked about Ida's current sexual identity, which includes polymorphous perversions, queerness, and, of course, glitter. Enjoy listening to us dish, and hey, stick around till the end. I have a little surprise for Ida. So, Ida, tell me about your first memory of sex or sex energy.
So the first thing that comes to mind, and this is the thing with a lot of questions that relate to first, I don't know if these were actually the first things. These are just the first things that come to mind.
Yeah.
One thing that really, really, really stands out to me is when I used to watch movies with my parents. There are like two memories. One, when I used to watch movies with my parents and like a sexy scene would come on, they would ask me to close my eyes or leave the room.
Mm-hmm.
So I remember, you know, knowing that these things were not appropriate for a child of my age. And I was just like a little kid. And the other thing.
Yeah, how old were you?
I'm trying to think. I feel like that kind of avert your eyes continued on for a while, but probably like 5 to 8 or 10 or something like that. So there's that. And then there was this memory of a book that I got at a school fair. We were doing this thing called Family Day. And if you put in, you know, dollars to this raffle, you could like draw a little number from a bag. And if you drew a blank number or sort of a blank piece of paper, you would just get like a random little prize. But if you drew a number, you would get whatever prize was numbered with that. And I got this book that was about sex, which I don't think was super appropriate, but I don't, you know, I'm very confused. I don't know how this book kind of like slipped through the cracks. It was a book in English and, you know, I grew up in Puerto Rico, so that wasn't our first language, but it was this book in English about a little cartoon heart going through, I guess, its life cycle. And it had, you know, it had stuff about sex in it, because I definitely remember the word orgasm. I definitely remember the word lust. And I was just very disturbed. I like,
whoa,
was like, what is this book? I eventually showed it to my mom. And then I was like so upset at it that I ripped it up into little pieces and just threw it away after reading it the first time and feeling uncomfortable. I was just like, get this.
Wow.
This needs to go.
How did your mom react when you showed her this book?
I honestly don't remember. I know that she didn't, you know, she didn't approve. She probably was kind of confused about what the heck this book was. It wasn't, you know, visually explicit. It was like little cartoons and it was little doodles of like a heart or something. And I've never been able to figure out what book this was, who wrote it, who illustrated it. I have no recollection of anything that would be helpful in finding this book again. But if any, you know, if any listeners know what the heck this little book about a heart and, you know, invoking orgasm and lust is all about, please let me know, because I've been curious. She was disapproving, and I think she was like, hey, you should throw it out. And I, you know, being the overachiever, I was like, I'm going to throw it out. I'm going to rip it. I'm going to rip it into tiny pieces and throw it out.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, so from reading that book, what did you think sex was without really knowing what sex was?
I've been journaling since I was about 6 years old. So I remember writing about a bunch of stuff and sex coming into the picture, or like sexuality rather, coming into the picture mostly through the idea of kissing or touching before it was, ah, yes, these are ways to have sexual intercourse. But I, you know, what I do remember is that my parents were always pretty forthcoming about sex, very specific kinds of sex, you know, heterosexual sex within marriage. Those were the kinds of sex that were acceptable. But within that paradigm, like they definitely thought sex was beautiful and really important, and they weren't ashamed to talk about it. So the idea of sex being this dirty, bad thing was not really part of my upbringing. But the kinds of sex that I have now definitely were not seen as appropriate. And we can get into that later.
Yeah. So tell me about your first sex talk then. Like, I'm curious to hear about that because, like, my upbringing around sex was so incredibly shaming. And there's a lot of baggage around it, lots of religious stuff coming up around it. I didn't really have a lot of, openness about sex. So the sex talk that I had was really awkward and weird. I'm curious about how your first sex talk was with your parents or whoever it was that gave you the sex talk.
Yeah. I think that part of the sex talks were prompted by just talking about bodies in general. I remember around fourth or fifth grade, we got some sex talks at school that were really about like periods and, you know, jock straps and, you know, body development and puberty. And so my parents followed up with, you know, their own information. And they'd already been talking to me about this stuff and bodies, you know, before fourth and fifth grade. They insisted on using correct terminology and medically accurate terminology when I was growing up for like the vagina, the penis, the breasts. And so it was kind of just an extension of these conversations flowing into each other. I recall my parents giving me a book called It's a Girl Thing. I think it's like Mavis Jukes, who's the author or something like that. And it talked about puberty. It talked about sex. It talked about what oral sex was.
Oh, wow.
Which I clearly did not know what it meant before reading it. But I'd heard, you know, I'd heard stuff from the media. And like, this was also around the time when the whole thing with Bill Clinton and Monica Lewinsky was going on too. And so, I had questions. I didn't know exactly what was going on. So, you know, a lot of the conversations were through one-on-ones or giving me resources that I could read on my own. But again, there was never shaming of sex as long as it was within a context of marriage and heterosexuality. And they were very firm on that. Like they didn't want me to grow up thinking that sex was bad. Sex was good, but as long as it followed certain parameters.
So it doesn't sound like there was like one big talk. Like it was Mm-mm. a series of like small little talks and like little nudges that your family gave you about it.
Yes. Yes. And, you know, they made themselves really open to questions. So if there were specific questions that I had, I could always go to either of my parents and they would be totally happy to talk about it.
That's amazing. I love hearing these stories about people who are raised in like, I don't know, households that are more open and open-minded about sex. I mean, obviously your family had some pretty rigid ideas about sex because it was like, you know, had to be straight sex with your husband or wife or whatever, which mine was like that too. But like, there wasn't that sense of openness. It was almost like an unspoken thing for us. So mm-hmm. I'm always really interested in hearing other people's stories about it.
Yeah, for sure. And like that openness has continued. And, you know, obviously it has changed as my identity has changed. But, you know, I've had some really funny conversations with my parents. And there were times as a teenager or even as a college student that I would go out with my parents to like the grocery store or Kmart or whatever. And they, you know, I would notice that there were condoms in, you know, our caddy. And I was like, hey, mom, good job. That's excellent. You're still doing the thing. So it was like humorous and it was seen as a part of a healthy marriage. And it wasn't like, oh, hush, hush. She can't see the condoms, you know.
That's amazing. That's really amazing. So you mentioned your sexual identity. When did you feel like your sexual identity started to form?
I feel like I was in some way sexual or had sexual thoughts from a very young age. When I was little, I would say like 7 or 8, honestly. There were certain, you know, body parts that felt nice to touch. I would totally try to kiss a bunch of my friends. And it was a lot of like youthful exploration. So I had some friends who brought sexual games up. And we're like, oh, like, what if I, you know, what if this game involves like kissing on the lips and like, let's practice. So that definitely happened. And that was something that I didn't freely tell people for many years because I felt really weird about it. I was like, oh, was that okay? And I'm like, actually, a lot of people experiment as kids and it's really normal. And the only reason some people think it's weird is because they don't know how common it is and how a part of youth sexual development it can be. People think like, oh yes, only, you know, teenagers have sexual interests or desires. And actually sexuality is this lifelong thing.
Totally.
That, you know, is different based on the age that you are, obviously. And we have to think about consent and age appropriateness. But to think that little kids don't find pleasure in, you know, sometimes touching certain body parts or doing things like that, I think is misguided and uninformed, honestly.
Yeah. And I mean, this idea that we aren't curious. I don't know. I remember feeling this sense that like it wasn't okay to be curious. It wasn't okay to like know your body and to like to touch your own body. And like, and that's why I loved playing games like that, like 7 minutes in heaven or like spin the bottle. I mean, those games were like permission slips for me to be like, okay, so within this particular safe space, like we can explore and we can play. And then like after we leave this room or after we stop playing this game, like, you know, it's done. Like we can just walk away.
And also just looking at how culture and media messages and family messages seep in and change that kind of curiosity or how we look at that curiosity. Because again, I'm thinking of, you know, when I was like 7, 8, 9 and I, you know, I was curious and I played certain games with people that felt fine and I didn't have shame about. And then years later, I developed worries about them or shame or like had, in part because of religion, had thoughts about those being wrong or that, you know, sex was maybe a bad thing. I was raised Jehovah's Witness. And so ideas of, the, you know, ideas about what was appropriate came into play there too. Once I had sort of more brain capacity to interpret messages from the media. And so sometimes we, you know, we start off with really innocent curiosity and then we get all these messages layered on top of it. And it gives us a very different perspective of, you know, what we want, what we were doing and what that even means.
Totally. So like, what was your sexual identity or what did you think your sexual identity was from these experiences that you were having, that you were being curious about?
I don't think I thought about it too hard when I was really little. And I use my journals as a guidepost here because, you know, I used to write a lot. And so that gives me an that gives me insight into what I was thinking. So I remember, you know, talking about some of these explorations, but not really putting a value judgment on it, not thinking that it had anything to do with my sexual identity or development, just being like, it's a thing that is happening and blah, blah, blah. And then at the same time, you know, thinking that, you know, gayness was wrong and having very specific views on that, knowing that like gay people were probably fine, but gayness was not okay. Mm. And somehow not making the connection between, hello, you are sometimes playing these games with girls and you are also presumably a girl. So what is that? Like, I didn't make those connections. So I was able to be doing things and not, not judging myself for it, I guess, for some unknown reason. And then later, when I was probably in like 8th or 9th grade, then actually starting to think about, you know, what are my interests? What does this mean in a larger context? And sort of that's when I feel like my sexual identity started to grow and shift beyond, I have a crush on a boy and I'm a girl and it's great.
When did you have your first girl crush?
I didn't have my first girl crush until probably 11th grade. And so that depends on how you define it. So I didn't find a girl in person, like sexually attractive until 11th grade. But I knew I was interested in girls before then because of discussions with friends and honestly because of porn too. And I didn't have my first like romantic and sexual interest in another girl until I was in college. And then I was like, oh, wow. Yes. I was like, I would like to kiss you and also bring you flowers. This is more intense than I expected.
Oh, my gosh. So like, so you mentioned that you were raised Jehovah's Witness. Mm-hmm. What kind of beliefs did you grow up believing, understanding about sex and sexuality because of those beliefs?
You know, sex within a specific context was cool. And again, married and heterosexual. Masturbation was not. That was not a good thing. Another interesting thing about growing up as a Jehovah's Witness is that there was this book called Young People Ask, and I'm translating it from Spanish, so maybe it's called something different in English, but it was a book of, you know, common questions that teens have and the biblical responses to them. So questions about drugs and dating and sex and marriage and all of that. And in the book, and as well as in the religion, you know, group dates is what was allowed. Like you were discouraged, heavily discouraged from going on solo dates with people because they could turn into something more. And, you know, staying away from sinning is a goal, usually in many religions. So, you know, group dates were a way to avoid that. And masturbation was also seen as negative, or at least the way that I interpreted the scripture was that it was seen as negative. And yeah, there was not that much talk about gender roles beyond a pretty narrow view. And that's also where my family was really interesting. Like, they have very traditional and conservative views about some things, and then other things they're pretty progressive about. So it's this like weird hodgepodge. It's not as easily definable, I guess, as like, yes, they are conservative, or yes, they are liberal.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like a hodgepodge of beliefs about all those things and gender and sexuality.
And how did you navigate your sexual identity within those pretty strict rules of like only doing group dates and masturbation being wrong? Like, how was that for you?
Well, I did the masturbation thing and just didn't care, apparently. So I don't know how that happened. Well, part of it is that at age 11 or 12, we started kind of growing lax with going to Kingdom Hall, which is the Jehovah's Witness version of church. And so we kind of slipped away from the religion. And so I think that at the same time that puberty was hitting and I was growing more thoughtful about the world as my brain development happened, we were also moving away from the scripture. And so it allowed me to understand and be exposed to things that, you know, I maybe wouldn't have or wouldn't have had without the cloud of religion around it. And so that's why I think I was able to navigate it in a different way, had, you know, versus if we'd stayed in the church. And a lot of it had to do with the internet, honestly, and me making friends online and being able to have frank discussions about these things, things that I couldn't do with my friends in person. Because I went to a very small school that, like, nursery to 12th grade was about 750 students, and we all knew each other. And, you know, it was a very small universe. And so a lot of the discussions that I was able to have that were deeper were happening with people that I had never met in person, and some whom I still am in touch with, actually.
Oh, that's awesome. I love that. Were you part of like LiveJournal?
Heck yes.
Because I was totally doing that too, like looking on LiveJournal threads about sex and sexuality, because I couldn't have those discussions with my parents, and I certainly couldn't have them with my friends because they were just as stupid and dumb about it as I was.
Yeah, definitely LiveJournal. I remember DeviantArt was also a place where some of that
gosh,
happened.
Oh my gosh, yes. Oh, you're taking me back.
And there is a role playing forum called the White Ferret, which, if any of you know Harry Potter, that's a reference to Harry Potter, Draco Malfoy being turned into a ferret. I blame/credit that forum with a lot of the friendships that I made where I was able to talk about sex, to be honest.
So what was the weirdest thing you heard about sex from those forums?
Oh my God. I feel like that's also when my sort of goth phase started happening. So like the sex doesn't just have to be this fluffy romantic thing. It can have darker overtones. We can think about, you know, not just the narrative of cute little heterosexual couple going to prom. Like, there are other stories that we can make. So because there was Harry Potter involved, we also talked about, like, magic. And we also talked about, like, I don't know, just, like, things beyond the you know, all-American apple pie kind of sex, which was really interesting. And also really interesting because it was people from around the world. So it wasn't just folks from Puerto Rico. It wasn't just folks from the United States. I was making friends with people in Germany, in Australia, in the Netherlands, in Abu Dhabi, in Canada. And so all of us were coming to these conversations with different cultural backgrounds, with different family structures, and yet we were all still really invested in building stories and, you know, openly talking about these things. So sex wasn't the main thing that we were talking about. You know, we were really invested in plot and character development, but also, you know, there was some sexiness that we talked about there too. And some of the friendships that came out of that became really meaningful, deep friendships where we would stay up till really late talking about school and our crushes and like sharing links to songs. And, you know, that's how I got introduced to a bunch of different artists, and Placebo as a band was really influential. I was like in the span of a year, I went from, oh my God, Brian Malko is bisexual and he has orgies to cricket, wait, maybe I'm into that. Like in the span of a year or less, like a huge shift around eighth grade happened.
Oh my gosh, I have to say, I love hearing about Baby Ida. Like, this is giving me so much joy.
Baby Ida was ridiculous. Like, I just got a box from my parents of old mementos, and I just, it's funny to see how much things change and how much they don't.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's wild. So I just support everyone documenting their life and then looking back and seeing how ridiculous we all were.
Oh,
and how
gosh,
we still are probably ridiculous.
I have mad respect for you that you're even going through these boxes, because I have a giant box of like old stuff, like old journals and stuff like that. I'm too terrified to go through it because I'm like, I don't know if I want to see all the stupid things that I was saying. And like, I was super boy crazy, and it was just,
yes,
really, just lots of unrequited love. And it was just sad. And
I mean, especially if there's trauma for folks, that can be really hard. But I also think that it's so full of potential for empathy that that's part of why I look at it. And that's part of why I share some of that too, because, you know, looking at where I am now and my understanding of sex and gender and all of that, I'm like, wow, you went from this to that? Like, that's a lot of shifting. That's a lot of growth. And so whenever I feel like the world is a horrible place full of horrible people, I can look at narratives of change, and I can look at, wow, look at how much growth happened just within myself. I know that this is possible for others, and I know that this is possible for the world. So it gives me both hope and also a sense of compassion whenever I deal with someone that has beliefs that don't align with mine and I feel are detrimental to my very existence. I'm like, you know, I feel like change could happen, or let me hold this compassion if I feel like they are trying and maybe you're just not there yet. Because I was also a dumb little shit as well. So, like, I need to not be a jerk all the time, you know?
Yeah, that was beautiful. And that makes me want to, like, dig in my closet and pull out my box of horrible journals and read them. And maybe snap them and show them to you.
Yes, I want to see all of it. I mean, that's also, like, if we can have, you know, and again, I'm not saying now everyone please go to your live journal and expunge your entire record and, like,
yeah,
you know, do whatever. I'm saying that if we have safe spaces or people or context where we can share some of this, I feel like there's a lot of demystifying that can happen. And there are certain topics that we feel are taboo or are weird because we just don't know how common they are. And by telling our stories, we can demystify some of that and be like, oh yeah, you also did this, or you were also curious about this, or wow, I was not the only like weird 12-year-old thinking about whatever Lord of the Rings sexual scenario, you know?
Yeah. What were some of the hardships or like challenging moments that you experienced as you were coming into an adult sexual identity?
I would say that one of them was just not being able to share as much with my family anymore. Not that I speak for all Latino people, but as a whole, Latino cultures are very family oriented. It's a more collectivist view of the world than like white Anglo America. And so, you know, I was very used to telling my mom pretty much everything. And as I realized there were things that I was thinking or wanting or feeling that didn't work with her worldview, that didn't work with our family's values, I was like, well, I guess I got to keep this to myself. And that didn't feel great. And, you know, that is something that we're still working through, like how much we can share and weaning my parents off of the expectation of I will share everything with you. So I know that that was pretty difficult. And the other part, I think, too, was developing a healthy sense of body image, because I was raised, you know, in a culture where, and I guess in general, like our culture here in Puerto Rico or wherever, you know, has certain beauty standards that not all of us fit in, you know, fit in with. And so as someone who like was always at the very least chubby, and was really pale, where it wasn't, you know, cute to be super pale and, you know, had glasses and whatever, whatever. I look back, I'm like, you were fine, Ida, but at the time, like, it never really felt fine. And so being able to grow more comfortable with my body and with sort of all the things associated with it, I think that was a process. And I credit being in college with a lot of the developments in that arena. And specifically, I was in a co-ed fraternity where there were a lot of queer folks. There were a lot of folks who were really chill about nudity. And so being able to be around people where that was normal and that was encouraged and it wasn't weird was really, really amazing. And seeing other people whose bodies looked like mine, being happy, being naked, I was like, wow, this is great. Like, I can do it too. I can be part of this. I can also have less shame and less worry about my body by just being in this group where that was more of the norm.
Yeah. What kind of things did you do to like help you get more into a sense of body positivity, and not just like body positivity, but like owning your body and owning the space that you take up with your body?
Sometimes we would have like topless bar nights or like fully naked hangouts.
That's so cool.
There was this thing called like a sauna, and you know, obviously we don't have saunas in college, but we would like improvise a sauna.
How did you improvise a sauna?
So this was totally not within the rules of my college whatsoever, but anyway, we would be in a bathroom in the dorm, and we would close the door, we would put towels at the bottom of the door, and we would let the showers and the sinks run with the hottest water possible.
Oh my god.
And so we would essentially create a sauna in there.
That's genius.
Probably not the most environmentally friendly,
yeah.
but it was a thing. We would just like sit and chat and like sometimes play cards or, you know, just whatever. In this like makeshift sauna.
That's hilarious.
So that was, you know, that was a big part of it. And honestly, just Tumblr too.
Yeah.
That like I credit Tumblr with a lot of my more ingrained ability to find different bodies beautiful and different, you know, cultures and races beautiful in a society that doesn't value that kind of diversity. Because I was able to meaningfully curate a stream of content for myself that was what I wanted it to be and what I aspired to. So instead of, you know, and this is like, you can use this for like not the healthiest purposes, but you can also use it to like transform your life. I would, you know, purposefully look at blogs that had a lot of curvy women in them. I would purposefully look for blogs that had a lot more people of color. And by essentially giving myself a diet of different images than what I was accustomed to, I was able to transform how I felt about those just by sheer exposure. And I've actually had partners say to me, you know, by following your blog or by following your like sexy Tumblr, because I have like a million Tumblrs at this point, they're like, my interests have changed. Like the bodies that I find attractive have expanded.
Hmm.
Like I used to have a pretty narrow idea of what I thought was hot. And that is like, that is way bigger now. And it's because I've been exposed to it. Because sometimes we just don't know, you know, what we want or what we like, or we have a really narrow perspective. And if we see the capacity for joy and beauty and movement in other bodies and in other, you know, other ways, that is something that we can grow to to also see and not just be like, well, I guess theoretically other bodies could be beautiful, but I don't see it myself.
Yeah. I love Tumblr. Tumblr is so, I mean, it's so good for so many different things. I mean, there's some bad pockets, of course, but like Tumblr has been like very transformative for me as I step into my own sexual identity as an adult woman and my blackness, like owning that and owning my queerness. And I think it's important that people know that there are places that you can go online, specifically Tumblr, that can give you a glimpse of bodies and sexualities that aren't often seen a lot of the times.
Yeah. And I think for any person who's in an underrepresented group, that's also why I think there's so much power in living as openly as we can or as we feel safe doing. Because, like, again, not everyone can do it, should do it. This is not a directive. But, you know, I'm an educator and a speaker and whatever, but I'm also a therapist. And so we were talking about this earlier, that the boundaries of what we can share are very fuzzy, and it's very tricky to figure out, like, what is okay to say, what is okay to say publicly, how will that impact our work and our clients and all of that in a profession that is essentially built for not sharing anything and is built, you know, from a very white, heterosexual, cis, blah, 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 blah perspective that assumes you're never going to look like your clients. And it assumes you don't go to the same bars. It assumes you don't like the same music. And so it's very difficult to figure out what to share and not to share. But I believe very strongly in living as openly as possible, just to, at the very least, show other people that they have options, that there's not just one way to be a person, not one way to be a queer person, not one way to be a non-monogamous person. And building a sense of community through that, or even just, hey, I know this human and this is how they're living their life really radically and openly, and that's really great. Maybe this gives me ideas or exposes me to new lifestyles that I wouldn't have considered otherwise because of where I was or where I grew up. So that's why I'm really invested in, you know, having transparent conversations and like being as authentic as I can and not being like, ah, yes, me who has no insecurities, who has no past, who has no, you know, whatever.
Yeah. I mean, you've been through this journey, right, of figuring out who you are as a sexual person, like figuring out your sexual identity. What is your sexual identity today? Like, what words and like phrases and colors and, I don't know, I imagine your sexual identity includes a lot of glitter.
It you are correct.
And I don't know why I said I imagine that, because I know that to be true. We have danced before. I have seen the glitter fallout. So yes, I know that it incorporates lots of glitter. What else does your sexual identity incorporate?
Oh my God, quick tiny story before I even answer the question.
Yeah.
So I've been traveling a lot this summer, and I have a live-in partner, and they don't have, you know, as burning of an affection towards glitter as I do, but it's amazing that I've been gone so often, and yet, you know, they still keep finding glitter everywhere. And they're like, Ida, it's like, you're not even gone. It's like, how did this glitter get in my nose? I do not understand. I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't know. It's magic. But anyways, so in terms of what words and things, I actually, on my website, on my about page, I have like a little section with some flags, which is my way of, you know, noting some of my identities, but not necessarily using words, which I think is really, you know, kind of interesting.
Yeah.
But anyway, so in terms of words that fit and are a part of my sexual identity, I'm Puerto Rican. And that is not what someone would normally say is like, this is part of my sexual identity, I guess. But for me, being a queer person of color and Latina specifically, like that is important to me. That really informs how I live my life and like who I look for as partners and what I look for. I identify as queer. I can use the word bisexual, and that still feels authentic. It's not my favorite because queer feels more accurate, but bisexual also works. I identify as polyamorous. I identify as kinky. In terms of gender, that's been an evolving process. So right now, and actually for the last few years, probably, I'm trying to think of how long I've been identifying as genderqueer, but it's been, I'd say like maybe like 6 years or so, maybe more. Mm. But that's also been a journey. So other terms that I've more recently come to embrace are non-binary. I have mixed feelings about the term trans and if it applies to me or not, and we're still working through that. So that's kind of a more recent term that I'm like grappling with. But those are some kind of of the ones that I think of. And also, I was actually talking to another friend earlier today. There's this really fancy academic term, and I'm forgetting who the person who sort of coined it was. But there's this idea of polymorphous perversity. And it's
tell me more.
So it's the fancy definition is that it's a like general desire that can be like gratified in a lot of different ways, and that's like probably the Wikipedia version of it. And so it's this idea that sexuality doesn't have to be a really narrow thing, that you can get sexual gratification outside of traditional structures, that it doesn't have to be, I am only attracted to, you know, heterosexual cisgender men, and that you can find erotic joy in a lot of different places. And so, for example, there's a colleague named Zelaika Hepworth-Clark who's doing a lot of this work, especially around African diasporic sexualities. Mm. That's really fascinating. And so she's been working on looking at, you know, what kind of sexual attractions and sexual experiences can we have outside the idea of even just human interaction. So like one of the things that she talks about is sexual experiences with nature and, you know, what does it look like and what does it feel like to have an erotic charge to just basking in the sun? I was recently in the woods of New Hampshire and I went to a place called Diana's Baths and I went under a waterfall and I was like, this feels pretty erotic and this feels great. And there's, you know, it is not related to another human. It's just related to me and my body and how the water flows on me. And that, like, that was really surprising. I was like, this feels erotic. And it's just me and a waterfall. What does that mean? and so the idea of this polymorphous perversity is that you can be interested and gratified through the senses in a lot of different ways. And it doesn't just have to be within the narrow confines of what you've been raised to believe is socially acceptable.
I love that. That's amazing. And I identify with that as well.
Yeah. And like, that's a term that just like sometimes comes up. I'm like, yeah, I feel like there's a lot of ways that we can be sexually gratified. And again, you know, for me, it's really important to consider consent.
Yeah.
And, you know, ramifications of any kind of interaction. So I'm not just saying, yes, let's go off and be erotically charged with everything and anything, you know, indiscriminately. But that if we open up our minds to what other kinds of, you know, gratifying experiences we can have, we can get more pleasure in our lives, you know, and not just sexual pleasure, but pleasure in general. And I think that that's really important, especially for people who may have trauma around specifically sexual pleasure. Like, what other kinds of pleasure can you get? For people who maybe have a chronic illness and their body is different than it used to be a few years ago, what kinds of pleasure can your body get? We all have the capacity for it. And what does it look like in different bodies and in different lives?
Yes, I love all of that. And now I'm going to like look up that word and see about maybe practicing some polymorphous perversion myself. Is there anything that you would want to tell baby Ida about sex, about sexuality?
Oh, man. Yeah. You know, I don't really hold regrets. So I'm not, you know, I don't have anything to say like, oh, Ida, don't do this, don't do that. But I feel like probably saying, hey, everything's going to be okay. And you're going to be pretty badass. And you're going to be doing things that maybe you didn't expect. You're going to be ways that you didn't expect. But to just go along for the ride because it makes sense and it it's a good place that you're going to. And I would tell baby Ida or maybe college Ida that your libido might change and shift, especially when you go to grad school, and it's fine. That can happen, which I think can be a hard thing to grapple with for people who are sexual and have been sexual for a long time, to have their libido suddenly shift or drop.
Yeah.
It can be kind of worrisome or scary or weird. And I just want to tell little Ida, like, it will all end up working out, and you have the resources and the inner strength as well as the outer strength to get what you need and get what you need done. And you're going to be surrounded by really amazing, wonderful, loving people, and you're going to have such a wonderful community that will help you through all the ups and downs, that, you know, just keep on the path that you're on, and you're going to get to some places that are really beautiful.
Okay, so before I let you go, I want to ask you a few rapid-fire questions.
Cool.
Describe your last orgasm in a word.
Sleepy.
If your sexual energy were an animal, what would it be?
Oh my God, that's a great question. I'm just going to say spotted hyena, and we'll see. Maybe we'll leave. You know what? Hold on.
That was so specific. Not a regular hyena, but a spotted one. I love it. You have to elaborate.
Well, it's a toss-up. It's a toss-up between a spotted hyena or what is it? Is it like a spotted slug? I don't know. There's a really amazing slug sex video that
I
need everyone to go look at immediately.
I've seen that. That is strangely erotic as fuck.
Yep. I think it's like leopard slugs or something. So maybe a mix of, you know what? I'm just going to go with the slugs. I'm going to go with leopard slugs. That's my sexual energy right now.
Okay. I like it. And knowing that you mentioned the slug video brings context to that, because I would have been like, what?
Yes, go watch the video. And yes, there's a lot about slug sex that applies to my life.
Yeah, I'm going to see if I can find it and put a link in the show notes so people can see it. It's kind of weird. Like, when I tell people about this, I'm like, I don't know if this should be labeled not safe for work, but I don't know. Just watch it at your own risk. Who are your erotic muses?
Ooh, erotic muses. That's such a great, like, question. I feel like my first erotic muse is probably Brian Malko when I was in eighth grade. And I was like, I can see how that has impacted my sexual life. I find those questions always really hard to answer, because I feel like I don't idealize or look up to people in those ways. I'm like, I look at little bits and pieces of every person. And so honestly, whenever a question like, who's your hero? Who's your muse? I always feel like I just look at the people that I currently have in my life, and I'm like, all of them, all of you. So like every person that I interact with, that I consider family, like chosen family, chosen sexy family, all of them have some level of inspiration. Like, my partners right now are inspirational in some way. And like my friends, like you and folks from, you know, A camp, like all of them are, you know, inspirational in some way. And so I don't have like a particular person, which is, it sounds like a cop out, but it really isn't. I just don't, like, my brain doesn't work that way, I guess.
No. I mean, you just named like a whole grip of people. Would you say though, that maybe one of your erotic muses is glitter?
Oh, you just blew the lids off everything that just happened in my brain. Cause I was thinking of people, like who are my people muses? And I was like, not being polymorphously perverse enough. So good job. I was like, yeah, maybe I can think of like, you know, the waterfalls at Diana's baths are my erotic muses right now.
Yes.
And glitter and rainbows.
Yes.
Those are probably my erotic muses right now.
That's perfect. One of my erotic muses are like amethyst gemstones. So
Opals and moonstones also.
Yeah, see, look at you naming all of the amazing things that are your erotic muses that are not people.
Perfect. That made it so much more expansive. I love it.
Okay, a couple more. What is one song that gets you in the mood?
Oh my God. It's funny because I'm like, I have so many sexy playlists.
Oh, I know. I've listened to a couple of your sexy playlists. I'm like, damn, they're good. They're really good.
Yes. I feel like right now, one of the ones that like is so like, yep, that's where I am. I am feeling the sexiness is probably Use You by Dave Gahan.
Mm.
So that one... That one and I'll probably use that one. That's the one that I'm connecting to a partner right now, and so like pretty immediately I think of them. I think of them doing their like drag act to that song, and it has a pretty intense erotic charge. So I'm like, yep.
Ooh. Okay. All right. And last question, what is the best sex advice you've ever been given?
The most personal advice that I think I got and the most relevant one right now was just that I am allowed and that I have permission to not want to do certain things, even if they normally feel good. And that I am allowed to interact with sex differently every time. And so to give myself that room and that permission, I think has been really important sometimes because I think it can be easy to forget if you've, you know, been in a pattern of sexual interactions with someone or if you've been accustomed to sex in a particular kind of way, we sometimes pressure ourselves into doing certain things that we don't necessarily want to do. So just the advice of give yourself permission to be authentic, give yourself permission to not do something recently has been really helpful, especially when navigating gender stuff. So that's been like really less about technique and more about mental health and sex. And that's been really nice.
Yes. Oh, I love that. And you just like gave us all a message with that last bit. I love it. Thank you so much, Ida, for coming on and talking sex with me. If people want to find more about you, where can they go?
Oh my God, I am upsettingly easy to find on the interwebs. My website is www.aidamandulely.com. And that is the place where I do my blogging and whatnot. I'm also really easy to find on Twitter. And on Twitter, I'm NeuronBomb. And I have a Facebook page that people can follow as well.
Fantastic. Thanks for talking with me, love. I really appreciate it.
Rock and roll. Always a pleasure.
So remember how in our conversation, Ida was telling me about how they were going through their old journals and how I said I was terrified to do that because I was super boy crazy and dreaded revisiting these stupid, sad memories? And then remember how Ida went on this beautiful spiel about how going through old memories helped them to find compassion and patience for others? And remember how my heart started to soften a little bit at the idea of reading old journals, and Ida was like, yes, I want to see all of it. Well, this is for you, Ida. Oh my gosh, I can't believe I'm about to do this. Oh, okay. February 29th, 2000. I am mad at my parents tonight. They don't give me freedom to do things. I really like this boy, Tim, and I think he likes me, but my parents won't let me ask him out because they say it's not a woman's job. They also won't let me because I am too young to be thinking about love. But my heart yearns for Tim Burns. I wish I could hold his hand and fall asleep in his arms. But my fantasies will never come true, for my parents don't want me to grow up. They have to realize they can't let me be the same old girl always and be a loner, and I will never stay their baby. I have to let stuff happen so I can learn from it. I talked to my dad about it, and I think he was about to consider, but then I guess he didn't want to let me go so soon. We aren't going to kiss or hold hands, even though that would be something. I wish I knew him more enough for him to ask me out. End. March 15th, 2000. I haven't written in many days. Things have been busy here. Spring break is soon, actually on Friday. 2 weeks off of school, I can't wait. I don't think we will be doing anything special, though. We are going to a party Saturday. It should be fun. My cousin is turning 1 year old. It will have a bounce house and everything. I hope cute guys will be there. I haven't seen Tim lately. I miss him. End. March 21st, 2000. Still no sign of Tim. End. March 28th, 2000. My mom said I can get Tim's phone number. I wonder if he'll call me. Probably not. I don't think he likes me like I like him, though. Darn. I was hoping he would, but you never know. I haven't seen him in 5 Tuesdays. I hope he wasn't scared about the letter I wrote him. Was that a mistake? March 29th, 2000. Oh, you will never guess what. Cameron asked me out. What did I say? Yes, of course. I am so happy. End. April 3rd, 2000. Haven't written in a while. I'm not so excited about Cameron asking me out. Mommy says since he lives thousands of miles away, he could easily play me. Did I mention he lives in Kentucky? I was kind of worried at this, so I emailed him. He hasn't emailed me since Saturday. Do you think he does like me? I still want to go out with Tim, but I am not so sure with Cam. End. April 19th, 2000. Yay, I got my gel pen working. I am so happy now. I dumped Cam. I had to. I didn't like him, and he sounded nerdy on the phone. Now Tim sounds really sexy on the phone. I am in love. September 12th, 2000. The frustration is building up in my head, so I thought to write you. I cannot imagine being an only child with my parents. All they do is make me upset. Take boys, for instance. They won't let me call them. Understood, but it's my birthday this Friday, and all I requested was a simple 2 calls for 2 boys. Apparently, they don't trust me, because they will not allow me to call Tim. I miss him so much. They don't understand how much. All I want to do is just call him. I guess if I call him, it would be like him and I talking about sex. You know, phone sex. But that isn't the case. I am probably the only girl in my school who has never had a boyfriend. Cam and Bryce don't count. I hate that I can't call boys. I hate that I am now almost 13 and nothing has changed. They're so overprotective. I can't stand it. Oh my gosh. this is crazy. Reading these journals, Ida, do you see why I didn't want to do this? Thank you for listening to the Sexually Liberated Woman podcast. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, share it with a friend, or guess what? You can now leave a review on iTunes. That's right, the Sexually Liberated Woman podcast is finally officially on iTunes, and now you can subscribe so you never miss an episode. Just search Sexually Liberated Woman in iTunes and hit the subscribe button.
And if you've been listening for a while and have been loving what you're hearing, I would really appreciate it if you left me a 5-star review. Leaving reviews helps others find the podcast, but also helps others find sexual liberation, which is a win-win, I think. As for me, Evian, you can find me on my blog, sexloveliberation.com, where I write essays about sex, sensuality, and erotic power. I'm also on Instagram at evian.whitney, that's E-V-Y-A-N, period, W-H-I-T-N-E-Y, where I'm capturing moments of brazen femininity and sexuality throughout the day. And if you want to be a sexually liberated woman, go to sexloveliberation.com/SLW, and maybe I'll be chatting with you about your journey of erotic empowerment someday. See you in the next episode.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic-butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.